We are in Daniel. He's not in the lion's den yet, but going to get there. We are still in the beginning, and therefore not much of an area for us to be memorizing verses, so I'll get to it eventually. What we're dealing with here in Lesson 3, we have just seen now the story of the siege and the taking of some of the young men, many of them, in fact. And we see, beginning here, number 3, the pressure was to change them. He's going to bring them in and demand that they be part of his administration, part of the wise men. But he can't have them as Bible-believing Jewish young men. So he's trying to change them. Here's how he does it. Now, among these were of the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Much more mellifluous names. Do you know the word mellifluous? Beautifully sounding. Unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, a rough barbarian sound, and to Hananiah, Shadrach, and to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. And so you can tell the change. Daniel means God is my judge. Hananiah means Jehovah is gracious to me. The on the end is the Yah, short for Jehovah. Mishael is he who is God. El is God, as in Daniel. And then, as God or ask of God, and then Azariah means Jehovah is my help, or Jehovah helps me. Now, the change of the name, Belteshazzar means Bel hath hid and treasured, or Bel's treasurer. Bel is one of the gods. Shadrach means king's messenger. Meshach means of Shach, one of the gods. Abednego means a servant or worshiper of Nego. So now they have to wear these false names. Now, you kind of get used to this type of thing. People are always talking about, you know, how Christmas and Easter and so on, these things are named during Roman Catholic times, and how the names mean bad, we ought to change it and so on. But we're okay with Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Saturn Day, you know, I mean, Sunday. Moon Day. Tus was a Norse god. Woden for Wednesday, that's why there's a D-E-N in there. And Thor, if you like Thor on Marvel Comics, that's Thor's day. Fry was Fries. So those words don't mean that to us. And so these names would have not meant that. It's interesting to me that right from the beginning, we never hear anybody calling Daniel Belteshazzar. So there's something about him, his being, that Daniel just seemed more correct. All right, the next section is Daniel and friends ask for an exemption. This is where you go to your authority and say, I would prefer not to do what you said, but to accomplish your goal, I'd like to do it in a different way. So the exemption, Daniel's purpose, but Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Do you remember that earlier, to make these people better than average, they didn't have to scrounge in the market for their food. From the food that the king ate, which would then have been considered in Babylon the best food possible, there was a problem here for Daniel. Now, the Jewish food laws explain his purpose concerning the king's food. no guarantee that it would be kosher, that it wouldn't be pork, it wouldn't be all these other things that he was not supposed to eat. They couldn't eat seafood like lobster or things like that that didn't follow those rules. It is harder to explain his hesitation concerning the wine, and it's mentioned specifically. The Jews drank wine. There was no great difference in the making of wine. But perhaps, and this is what I tend to think, Daniel, as one of the royal heirs, these were people of the king, determined to refrain from all wine, just not drink it. Proverbs 31:4, for it is not for kings, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes strong drink. Now, granted, this would be written in the time of David and Solomon, but maybe that was the concept. All right, so Daniel's purpose, Daniel's request. Therefore, he requested of the prince of the eunuchs. Now, let's recognize prince of the eunuchs. This is the guy that has been assigned to all the newcomers. His job, to get them educated, to get them, you know, well-fed, all this business. So he goes to him that he might not defile himself. Daniel's favor. Now, God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. I was looking up the meaning of favor and tender love, and both of them mean about the same thing. This is just, and God had brought this about. So we find that here's a man that probably had no reason to love any of these captives, but Daniel was special. We remember that he like the others, were fair of face and form, and they were, well-mannered and schooled in the art of speaking in court and all this kind of stuff. So there wasn't anything offensive about him. And he came with the right idea. He was there because God had exiled him, and he knew that this was God's purpose. I think he might have had a sense that in a role of authority that he was being trained for, he might be able to do some work for God. Proverbs 16:7, when a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh even his enemies to be at peace with him. So we find this principle of God working in Daniel. You try to be the person that God wants you to be, and people will appreciate you. Daniel's obstacle. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king. He says, Daniel, you know, I'd do anything for you, but over me is Nebuchadnezzar. I answer directly to him. And you know what he's like. Whatever he says is it, and he doesn't let anything go by. So I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink. This is a little scary for me to try to change his menu. For why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me endanger my head to the king. Now something in this makes Daniel see that he could not risk making an exception for some of the people that he's dealing with. However, the prince of the eunuchs was over them all, and he liked Daniel, would be favorable to this request, but he wouldn't risk it. There was another man under prince of eunuchs that was particularly caring for Daniel and his three friends. So we find the test in verses 11 to 14, Daniel's alternate request. Then said Daniel to Melzar. This is a word that means the guard or the steward. It might have been then just taken, you know, you'd say, yes, sir, or yes, sheriff or whatever, you know, you call a person by the name of their, call a pastor, you call them by the name of their office, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they had a personal guardian, they had a personal officer. So he goes to him and says, it's your job to take care of us. So we'll ask you to take care of us in just a slightly different way. So don't miss the change of names there. So he says, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days. We're not saying do it forever, but we're saying that we'll give my God a chance to show that by doing it his way, we're okay. 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat. Now, pulse seems to be confusing to nearly everybody, but it seems to mean vegetables. And water to drink. Then let our countenances, the thing that Prince of the Eunuchs had said, I don't want you, your face looking dull and listless and stupid and drooling. We don't want you looking bad in front of everybody else compared to the other people. Let our countenances be looked upon before thee and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, as thou seest, deal with thy servants. There was a time, and I've forgotten all the details, but there were a Jewish plane was captured by a Muslim people, and you remember that story? They were held hostage, and then they were broken loose. There was a movie about it. Anyway, I've forgotten all the details. But I remember in the movie pointing out that everybody was sick, except for two guys. One was a rabbi, and the other was another guy, and he said, how come you're not sick? He says, because whenever I am out of the land, I eat kosher. Whenever I'm in a questionable place, I eat kosher. And so the only thing he could eat would be what the rabbi was eating, and that's safe food. Now, it wasn't blessed by a priest in this case, but you see, that's the thing. So he says they might react to the king's food, where we won't. Anyway, so turning from the prince of the eunuchs to their more personal supervisor, here called Melzar or guard, Daniel puts in the proposed test. International Bible Encyclopedia comes to the same conclusion. Pulse, it must mean herbs or vegetables grown from seeds. A vegetable diet is what is implied. Daniel realized that the ones in power were not trying to get him to violate his conscience. That wasn't their goal. In that case, he would have had to say, no, we won't do it, and we'll take whatever punishment to violate God's law and violate his conscience. What were they trying to do? They were trying to give him what they thought was the best food available. So he adopted their goal. Check us and see if we're not doing the best, and ask permission to try an alternate way to achieve it. So the test is granted. So he, Melzar, consented to them in this matter and proved them, tested them, 10 days. Now Daniel would let God vindicate his dietary laws by giving him them good health on this restricted diet. So if not, then they wouldn't have had any choice and they would have to do whatever was necessary. All right, then the exemption is granted at the end of 10 days. Their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. I think this implies that the Jewish boys weren't faring too well on pork chops and bacon, you know. Then Melzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink and gave them pulse. He says, okay, then this is settled. You get this. Now, in actual fact, it's very difficult in a vegetarian diet to get protein. Protein, normally we get that from meat. It's not impossible, but they must have chosen their vegetables wisely, since it's difficult to replace the protein of meat with vegetables alone. Legumes, is that how you say it? Legumes? Legumes? Beans, peas, lentils. I love lentils. I guess I love beans and peas too. But lentils are a little less common. Nuts, seeds, soy products, and whole grains will supply protein. So a lot of vegetarians out there watching that carefully. Not necessarily out here, but out in the world. All right, point D then. God blesses Daniel and friends. Now, in one way, he already has. He has made this work well for them in this place. Their sensitivity to the commands of God, even in this place. So, first of all, the blessing of knowledge, wisdom, and revelation. God revealing things. Verse 17. As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning, the ability to learn, and wisdom, how to handle what you know, do it in a wise way. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now, this is a summary verse of introduction. The summary statement borrows from what God would do later on in the story. So, it hasn't happened yet. He didn't, from the very beginning, he didn't have the ability to understand dreams and so on, except as God gave him the ability. Number two, then, the blessing of the final interview. And this, again, now is going to be at the end of the 3 years. We're going to back up into the story of interpreting Nebuchadnezzar's dream statue. and that will happen before the 3 years. But at the end of the 3 years was a wise man university graduation. And so the conclusion of the 3 years of training, now at the end of the days that the king had said he would bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. So prince of the eunuchs, now not just Melzar, who'll probably be walking along with the others, but prince of eunuchs, this was his job. Now we're going to see how he does. Verse 5 says it would be 3 years they stood before Nebuchadnezzar. Point B, the position earned. And the king communed with them. He brought them in. There was a person-on-person interview. And among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. So stood they before the king. He said, of course, that's how they talked. No, this is, they graduated with honors. Albert Barnes says, the phrase stood before the king is one which denotes elevated rank. They were employed in honorable offices at the court and received peculiar marks of the royal favor. You are ones who will stand with me, the king. Then we see competence is achieved, and in all matters of wisdom and understanding, which was understandingly the job of the wise men, right? Wisdom and understanding, that the king inquired of them. He found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. This is why you recognize familiarity with the Word of God makes you familiar with the truth, with the way things really are. Now you add to it the strange things of the Babylonians. They were as far as we can read back into it, Babylon was the beginning of occultism as we think of it today. They had the zodiac and all these other things worked out, and it all meant something. And dreams, you know, the catalogs of dreams. But we'll get to that. So as we follow the story, we will see all four elevated in rank to the highest authority of wise men. And then number three, the blessing of Daniel's longevity. And Daniel continued even unto the first year of King Cyrus. So as a teenager, he comes in, and he's going to last even into his 80s. The Daniel that we see there in the lion's den is in his 80s, as far as we can tell. The first year of Cyrus was not the end of his work, Daniel 10:1, but he continued even until Cyrus. Comment.
Copy his own copy of the first 5 books of the law.
Yeah, I don't know. Within the work of the wise men, they were set at the top.
But each king of Israel had to write out the law, had to have a copy of their own.
Right. I don't imagine Nebuchadnezzar had anything like that.
These guys.
Oh, yeah, it could be, could well be. And they seem to be quite, at least Daniel, seems to be quite familiar with the law, so he might have taken in hand as a prospective royal person to write out his own version of the law. Yeah. That'd be pretty good. We had the president, senators, and congressmen to write out their own personal copy of the Constitution. That'd be a good idea. All right. We come now to, that was all the introduction of the book, of Daniel and what's going on. We come now to the story. First of all, the times of the Gentiles. Now, I've named it this because, and we won't understand this till we actually get to the end of the dream statue. But chapter 2 to 728 is going to take us through times of the Gentiles. This begins with Nebuchadnezzar's dream of the statue in chapter 2. Number one, Nebuchadnezzar's dream rattled. The king dreams dreams. And in the second year of the reign, so we're in the second year of the reign, the second year of the Wise Men University, second of three. Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams wherewith his spirit was troubled and his sleep break from him. There are nightmares that scare people. Then there are dreams, as Nebuchadnezzar has here, that seem to mean something beyond your ability to grasp. Now, God gave this dream because God was using Nebuchadnezzar. God calls Nebuchadnezzar his person, his servant, even though he was not a worshiper of Jehovah. But God was using him to accomplish his will with Israel in the captivity. So Daniel and his friends were to study for 3 years. During the second year of reign, 604, Daniel had not yet graduated from Wise Men Academy. The story occurred before the king's interview that we just described. So the king's interview would have taken into consideration what happens here. It happened the year before that. That makes sense? We're now taking up the story, backing up a year from the graduation ceremonies that we were just reading about. All right. Point B, king summons wise men. Dreams, I have to call the wise men. They're the experts in dreams. Supposedly, there's something about this that means that Nebuchadnezzar was wise enough to listen to the wise men interpreting dreams and say, I don't get it. Why is this happening? Now, it may be that the gods are telling them what this means, so it doesn't have to make sense to me. No God has spoken to me. Well, now, this is important enough that he wants to know, so he's not going to settle for something lesser. The call for assistance. Then the king commanded to call the magicians, the astrologers, the sorcerers, the Chaldeans. So four names for the group that you would call the wise men. They had the different ways of approaching the science of the knowledge of mysticism and all that, for to show the king his dreams. Now, right from the beginning, the point is to show me the dream. So they came and stood before the king. Now, you understand that they had no special power. There actually is no real magic. These people study all this stuff, give great attention to it all, and it means nothing. However, they can be convincing and authoritative and say, this is what it means. All right, the command for assistance. The king said unto them, I have dreamed a dream, and my spirit was troubled to know the dream. Now, to know the dream probably means to know what this is all about. What does it mean? Then the king's demands truth. Now, the scriptures, from the phrase, O king, live forever, we're going to get to that, O king, live forever, and continue that to the end of chapter 7, are written in Aramaic. Everything up to here has been in Hebrew. Now it's a change of language. Aramaic is a language not the same as Hebrew, though it is quite similar. But it's notable in the original language. All right, number one, wise men agree to interpret. To interpret, you see. And they're eager to help out. So, then spake the Chaldeans to the king in Syriac, Aramaic, O king, live forever. So there was the introduction to the change of language. Tell thy servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation. So they're looking at each other like we're missing something here. He's not telling us the dream. He says, tell me the dream. But I'm sure what he means is what we always do, is tell the interpretation. So let me tell you this. Now, at this point in our history, the Babylonian dream guide was discovered in the ruins of the city of Nineveh among the tablets from the library of the emperor Ashurbanipal. This dream guide, known as Iskar Zakiku, I'll say. I'm probably as good as anybody else, right? This last word is the name of the god of dreams. The word simply means spirit, but that was the god of dreams. It is a compendium of oniromancy, study of dreams, interpretation of dreams. So, this is how they did this. They collected information. It was written in Akkadian and spanned 11 tablets. I think pages, but on clay. With the central portion dedicated to decoding dream omens, and the outer sections offering rituals to ward off bad dreams. Okay, that's your dream. It's a bad dream. Let's talk about how to avoid bad dreams. No more pepperoni pizza before bed, you see, something like that. The dream god Zakiku, whose name means spirit or ghost, was believed to send these visions. Not every dream, perhaps, but these visions. The interpretations were often poetic and symbolic. For example, if a man dreams he is eating a raven, well, that's not attractive, but that's the word arbu, he will have income, irbu. You dream arbu, you'll have irbu. So a little poetic play with words. If a man dreams he's eating human flesh, saru, or siru, then he will have great riches, saru. So, I hate to think where they came up with this. The guy says, yeah, I sat down to eat a meal. What were you eating? Uncle Tom or something, you know, I don't know. But a horrible situation. And right after that, he won the Babylonian lottery or something, I don't know. So these tablets weren't just superstition. They were not treating this as a light thing. They formed the backbone of a systematic dream theory that influenced later cultures. And all the later cultures, if they go back and say, well, how do we figure this out? Well, the Babylonians worked it all out. And so, you know, you go back to that, including the Greeks and the Romans. Dream manuals, of which several examples have come to light, and if you wanted to check that out, I'm not sure why you would, but A.L. Oppenheim, his article, The Interpretation of Dreams in the Ancient Near East, in the book called Transactions of the American Philosophical Society, it consists accordingly of historical dreams, histories, dream, people of history, dreams, and the events that followed them, arranged systematically for easy reference. Now, since these books had to try to cover every possible eventuality, They became inordinately long. So now we call in the need for the wise men, these people to study these things and have an idea where to look, see? So only the expert could find his way through them, and even he had to know the dream to begin with before he could search for the nearest possible parallel. This is from Joyce G. Baldwin, Daniel, an Introduction Commentary. So this is something they knew how to deal with. They had been dealing with it for many years. They had accomplished, they had an encyclopedia of dreams, you know. But the king adds an impossible condition. The king says, the king answered and said unto the Chaldeans, the thing is gone from me. Now this has been nearly universally misunderstood, and in English it's quite understandable. But the thing that is gone from me, John Gill explains, it may be rendered, the word is confirmed by me. The thing that he's talking about was his command. I have given a command. That's what he's saying. It's come from my mouth. Leon Word translates it, the order from me is sure. So please grasp this idea. The phrase does not mean he forgot the dream. This wouldn't be a test, you know. He's waiting for them to tell him a dream so he can say, oh yeah, that was it. He was fully aware of the dream. So what he was doing, it was shown in verse 9, we're going to see his words there. The king is making it clear that they have been given all the information he's willing to share. They must tell him the dream and its interpretation. Now, he's very serious about this. Failure means death and disgrace. If ye will not make known unto me the dream with the interpretation thereof, ye shall be cut in pieces, you'll be made pieces, piecemeal, and your houses shall be made a dunghill. Not a good future for you if you don't give me this. So this was a surprise to the wise men, completely out of the ordinary request. And just look at their faces. Look at them talking to each other. Am I hearing him right? What's going on here? However, that was the stick. Here's the carrot. Success means reward and honor. But if you show the dream and the interpretation thereof, both of them, ye shall receive of me gifts and rewards, or fee, and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and the interpretation thereof. So the king has determined to check up on their ability to interpret his dream. He doesn't want, you will meet a tall, dark stranger and fall in love. He doesn't want that one, see. Perhaps got that one the last two times. If they can answer correctly what the dream was, then he will be satisfied that they can really tell him what it means. Now again, he was assuming that the only way they could really do this is that the gods would have told them what this is all about. Now listen to their words. The king repeats his demand. The wise men agree to only interpret. They answered again, saying, let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation thereof. Their rebuttal is basically, but that's not how it's done. You tell the dream, we interpret the dream. We look it up in the book. The king suspects delay. The king answered and said, I know of certainty that you would gain or buy the time, because you see the thing is gone from me. Again, that same phrase, you see I have given you the command. Now you're trying to bargain away from that, see? The thing is gone from me. Again, the meaning is that the king, in his haste to know the true meaning of the dream, has set a trap for false wise men who make clever guesses at interpretations. He seems to think they were using a delaying tactic to let him cool down and ask only for the interpretation. So he goes on to say the king suspects false generalities. But if you will not make known unto me the dream, there is but one decree for you, for you have prepared lying and corrupt words to speak before me, till the time be changed, till I change my mind. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I will know that you can show me the interpretation thereof. They're going to actually say to him, we can't do that. Only the gods know that. And he's going to say to them, well, yeah, that's why I ask you. You're supposed to be talking to the gods. you have just admitted that there's no reason for me to depend on anything you say. See? So he says, therefore tell me the dream and I will let you know. So lying and corrupt words is literally seeing a word lying and corrupt you have prepared to speak before me. Again, till the time be changed refers to a time when the king might retract his unusual demand. Only by telling him the dream, which he can verify, will he confidently believe their interpretation. Yes, Nancy.
It's possible that it was, if the God were sending him a message for soon interpretation, that the thing would happen before they would have to come back to call him the prophet for what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. For them, it's like you're saying, read my palm, but you have to tell me what my palm looks like, you know. And they're saying, no, it doesn't work that way. You have to see the thing. So they wanted to interpret the dream without supernaturally finding out the dream. Yeah. Comments or questions? Forgot to put this on whatever you call it, stop talking to me form. Hopefully you can't hear all that. It's doing it in my hearing aids, but it bothers me. All right, thank you. Let's stand together. We'll be dismissed with prayer. Our Father, you have taken one of your young men into a foreign land, part of the punishment for Israel's disobedience. But these young men were not part of that disobedience, and so you have craftily used the situation to benefit them and for them to benefit the people that are taking care of his people. We ask that you might so guide and direct in our thinking that we can begin to see that when trouble comes, it might not be our fault, it might be the fault of those around us, but we are then not to hate you, but rather just take the trying circumstances, the trial of our patience, and use it to the best ability to gain everything we can from it. We ask that you might allow Daniel to be that example to us of making the best and gaining from the trials that are set before us. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.